Speaking of liberty, the National Broadcasting Company presents another in a special series of programs under the auspices of the Council for Democracy. There was free talk in the old New England town hall and around the Cracker Barrel in the Crossroads store. And there's free talk by free men every week at this time, led by our host, Rex Stout. You may already know Rex Stout as the author of intriguing detective stories featuring the master criminologist, Nero Wolfe. On this program, you will get to know him even better as an outspoken champion of our American democracy, Mr. Stout.
Thank you, Reginald Stoneborough. Good evening, friends of liberty. The ancient art of casting horoscopes, which was practiced many centuries before our Declaration of Independence, or even Magna Carta, has recently got another black eye. According to official Nazi announcements, Rudolf Hess, the weekend guest to end all weekend guests, habitually consulted astrologists and stargazers, but they couldn't even tell him he was going to break his ankle, let alone anything of real importance. It appears that the stars are still holding out on us. The only effective method machinery for foretelling the future is still a careful study of the past, wide information, an active and shrewd intelligence, and a full and varied acquaintance with the vast intricacies of international politics. All these aids to prognostication by our good fortune are gathered together in the person of our guest this evening, Pierre Van Passant. Many of you already know Mr. Van Passant's autobiographical analysis of Europe during and after the First World War, Days of Our Gears. All of you should read his newest book, just published, The Time Is Now. Mr. Van Passant, we've asked you to come and tell us a little something as an experienced political observer of the shape of things to come. But before you do that, let's glance at the shape of things behind us. I've heard people quote you on the sinister, unpatriotic motives of European munitions makers during the last war, and I know very well that, like all men of goodwill, you hate war.
That is very true, Mr. Stout.
And still you seem to be convinced that we must face the risk of it today in order to save ourselves from something much worse.
That is also true.
And if you don't mind, start with this. Why did we fail to make the world safe for democracy 20 years ago when our hopes ran so high?
The answer to that question, Mr. Stout, is that we were not equal to the challenge that faced us. We allowed ourselves to be overcome with disillusion. We ridiculed the great apostle of the League of Nations, Woodrow Wilson, and we killed with laughter that first attempt to establish an international order sanctioned by international justice and agreement. We call it unrealistic and utopian and the folly of dreamers and professors.
Do you think that if we hadn't withdrawn from Europe, we could have made a new order really effective?
Well, we could at least have tried. Instead, some of us were guilty of weakness and cowardice and narrow self-interest. What faces us today is the direct result of our own lukewarmness to the ideals of democracy. The forces of evil abroad in the world at this time have found a place already prepared for them. The ground was cleared for their emergence into the light of day because of our own lack of vigilance, because we paid only lip service to democracy, because we regarded it merely as the comfortable status quo in which our own nation could enjoy a measure of well-being. That is why we failed 20 years ago, Mr. Stout, and that is why, unless we wake up very soon, we shall fail even more tragically today.
And a second failure would be even more calamitous than the first one.
Mr. Stout, the issue is nothing less than our own national freedom and independence. You think I exaggerate, perhaps. Let me explain. I believe the American people is a great and courageous people, and that it is willing to face the truth, no matter how bitter and forbidding that truth may be.
We'd better face it. Nehru, the great Indian leader, says that the truth is like a tiger. Face it, and you can tame it. Turn your back to retreat from it, and it will leap on you and devour you.
The truth we must face today is that the conflict raging in the world is not just another war in Europe. It is the preliminary to the last great battle of the West, the duel of hemispheres and continents before the course of the world is established for the next 1,000 years. What the British are fighting, what threatens us today, also is the Nazi drive for world power. It is das Weltreich der Deutsche. Great Britain is the great bulwark, and the only bulwark in the enemy's path to our shores.
You aren't speaking literally, are you, Mr. Van Passant, or do you really think that invasion of America is possible?
I know what is being said, Mr. Stout. With a two-ocean navy, with our impregnable position between two great bodies of water, how can an enemy ever break through our American defenses? But I would remind you that armaments are useless. If you are outmaneuvered before there is any actual fighting. Czechoslovakia was unquestionably, for her size, the best equipped and best prepared country of Europe. But what happened after Hitler had marched into Austria? The Maginot Line was one of the strongest defenses ever conceived by the mind of man, and it was never broken. But what happened when the German armies broke through at Sedan and turned its flank?
You mean the defenses into which we've been pouring billions of dollars and are will protect us only if we don't allow ourselves to be outplayed strategically before an attack is actually launched?
Exactly. What I find so difficult to explain to people is how much America can lose without firing a single shot. Hitler can be kept out of this continent only if his path to Dakar is blocked. You think that sounds too definite, too simple? Then consider. If Hitler is allowed to take the West African coastline, and he's on the way now, the defense of the whole Western Hemisphere becomes extremely difficult. He would then be poised for a leap across the ocean to the republics of South America, which are in no way able to withstand him. Once in South America, he would immediately develop strategical bases from which aerial, naval, diplomatic, and commercial attacks could be launched to the north. I tell you, Mr. Stout, Hitler's march around the oceans can be stopped only if serious obstacles can be placed in his path, either at Dakar or in Egypt or in Persia or in British India.
That's a striking phrase, Mr. Van Passen, the march around the oceans. But Hitler isn't in a position to do anything like that now, is he? Won't he need several hundred more warships before he can march around the oceans?
No, that is the crux in the heart of the whole situation. You have probably heard a good deal of speculation as to where the next blow will fall, have you not?
At least a million words of it. The attackers aim the blows. That is why those who confine themselves to defense nearly always lose. They don't know where to go. They move blindly in a fog of uncertainty.
Believe me, there's no uncertainty on the part of the Germans. Have you ever heard of the Geopolitical Institute of Munich, Mr. Stout?
Yeah. They used to call it the Institute of Political Oceanography, didn't they?
Yeah. You know more than most Americans, or English either, for that matter. The Geopolitical Institute, Mr. Stout, is the political and military planning academy of the German Reich. It has been in continuous existence for 45 years.
45 years? That goes back to the 19th century.
It does. Do you remember the famous political cartoon in Punch 40 years ago called Dropping the Pilot?
Sure, when the Kaiser decided to get along without Bismarck. It's been reprinted hundreds of times, and the Kaiser had the whole world guessing.
The accepted story was that Bismarck disagreed with the Kaiser's view on labor legislation. Actually, Wilhelm had decided to adopt the views and the plans of the Geopolitical Institute, and Bismarck refused to agree with him. As I see it, Germany's policy of today dates from that moment.
But you haven't told us yet how Hitler is going to march around the oceans without a dominant navy. A lot of people would say that was impossible.
Ah, but the Institute has a plan with which Germany can completely nullify and defeat the British Navy without ever fighting a battle on the sea. Hitler's armies are driving to those shores from which they can dominate the shipping of the world. In other words, the German army is pitted against the British Navy. The battle we have been taught to consider impossible is being fought at this moment, and the Nazis are proceeding entirely according to plan. Hitler can fight the Battle of the Pacific as well as the Battle of the Atlantic without ever invading the British Isles.
The skeptics still shake their heads, Mr. Van Passen, with the British Navy together with our own still in command of the sea.
That is just a point, Mr. Stout. The British Navy will not be in command of the sea because it will have no more bases and harbors from which to fight. Its foreign bases seized, its home ports and dockyards bombed into junk. Of what use will be the Navy if it has nowhere to land, nowhere to take on ammunition, nowhere to go for repairs? No, believe me, the march around the oceans is no idle dream or boast. Gradually, as the smoke and dust lift over the battlefields, the geographic significance of Hitler's conquests reveals itself. His military moves conform strictly to the design mapped out by the Geopolitical Institute, and the goal is the final domination of the oceans. Look for yourself. Merely glance at the globe of the world. Why did Hitler intervene in Spain? Why did he assist the Italians in North Africa and Greece? Because even as early as the Spanish Civil War, his two objectives were Gibraltar and Suez. With those two points in German hands, all British operations in the entire Mediterranean basin become impossible. And the Mediterranean itself is just the beginning. Actually, it is merely a great canal connecting the Atlantic and the Pacific. Conquest of the Mediterranean is the prologue to the Battle of the Oceans.
Well, if Hitler wanted to conquer Greece as a stepping stone, why did he wait so long before he came to Mussolini's help? Did he just want to show his partner up?
Oh, no. The German plan proceeded accurately on schedule. They waited, please observe, until the British had come to the aid of the Greeks, and in so doing had weakened their forces in Libya. Then what? Why, the Italian fleet comes out and is chased and caught by the British at Cape Matapan, but at the same moment, with British attention safely distracted and their land forces dispersed, the Germans quickly ferried their troops and tanks to Tripoli. And look what is happening in Crete, and the drive on Suez, vitally dangerous hard thrust to the British Empire, is launched in full force.
Say they get Suez, Mr. Van Passen. They may not, but say they do. Assuming that Hitler does win the entire Mediterranean, what happens next?
Next time you look at the map of the world, Mr. Stout, bear these names in mind. There are not many names, barely more than half a dozen, but ask yourself what effect they would have on the control of seaborne commerce, or on navies desperately trying to defend the British Empire and the continental United States. Gibraltar and Suez have already been conquered, considered. Dakar and Cape Town in Africa, Singapore, Natal on the east coast of South America, Panama, Manila and Pearl Harbor at Hawaii are, of course, islands and cannot be reached. But if Dakar falls, every other one of these great bases can be reached by German tanks and guns by routes that go over land, or such short stretches of water that their approach can be covered by land-based aircraft. That, Mr. Stout, is the march around the oceans, the master plan by which Hitler could defeat the British Navy and threaten the coasts of the continental United States without ever invading the British Isles, unless steps are taken to stop him soon.
If we do decide to stop him, how are we going to do it? Not, I presume, by making faces at him.
No. First of all, we must keep our eyes glued on the continent of Africa, because it is there that the battle for the Atlantic will be fought. If the march of the German armies is to be stopped, we must let them know where we consider our line of defense to begin and convince them that if they cross that line, we will intervene to stop them.
And proclaim our intention and our invincible resolution to the Turks and Czechs and Dutch and Norwegians and French, to all the millions who desperately need a new breath of hope, and if they get it, can help immeasurably.
Yes, Mr. Stout, we must face the fact that grave and far-reaching events are bearing down upon us, and meet them with courage and imagination. Out of the torment and anguish of our era must come the eventual restoration of the dignity of man. We must somehow send this message over the heads of the fascist governments to the now silent and imprisoned and regimented peoples they have conquered, and to the people of Germany, too. The prisoners must be set free, and everywhere it is the banners of the peoples that must go forward.
Thank you, Mr. Van Passen. That has the authentic ring of the battle cry of an idealist, and at the same time sounds like good, hard common sense. A democracy needs its Alexander Hamilton as well as its Patrick Henry. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest this afternoon is Pierre Van Passen. This is Rex Stout saying goodbye until next week.
You have just heard the sixth of a special series of programs entitled Speaking of Liberty, brought to you each week at the same time by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the Council for Democracy, a national organization dedicated to the propagation of an American faith in democracy. Next week, Rex Stout will bring Louis Adamick to the microphone. A copy of the script of this broadcast will be mailed free to anyone requesting it. Please address your letter or card to the Council for Democracy, 285 Madison Avenue, New York City. Speaking of Liberty has been presented as a public service by NBC and the independent radio stations associated with the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.